This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello, 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 and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast, brought to you by 90 Min. Oh, that was not a way to spend a Friday night, was it, lads? Joining me today, I've got Tom and Jaffo. How are we feeling after last night?
A bit deflated again. Yeah. Standard.
It's just a great way to kick off your weekend, isn't it?
Makes me not want to watch sport. This is the annoying thing. It's a great weekend of sport, and I can't enjoy it now.
I know.
Bloody Wolves.
It took a lot to get going for me today, sports wise, and you know, even seeing Man United lose, I couldn't work out whether I was happy about it, because you know it's always nice to see United lose, isn't it? Let's be honest. I couldn't get up for it in the same way I could have done if we'd have won last night or even drew. But hey ho. Yeah, we're going to talk about Wolves 1-0 defeat to Newcastle under a Friday night lights, a bit about if the European dreams dead and buried at this point, and a bit about Twitter corner. So guys, let's be honest, I don't think a lot of fans were really keen on the game yesterday as a whole, just because it being, as you said before, a Friday night, it being a big old trek up to Newcastle. Do you think that kind of affected how everyone's sort of mindset going into it at all?
I don't know. I think it's more, I think maybe more so the lineup. I think when the lineup was announced, I think it was just disappointment, really, after, you know, the sort of high of Villa. And then, you know, it just wasn't the same, was it? You know, it just didn't look as good on paper. And ultimately, you know, it proved to be the case.
Yeah, I think. But the back sort of five essentially stayed the same. You could have probably argued you wanted to see eight Nori come in again. But that might be a bit of a discredit to Marcel under previous games, because he's done solid. And a couple of enforced changes, which I think is the thing that really kind of has hindered Wolves yesterday, which was Dendonka missed out through illness and Podence through injury, which meant Luke Kundal came in and Hwang Ki-chan came in. And I think, you know, we'll go on to it in a bit, let's be honest, but it's just highlighted the squad depth, hasn't it, in that middle of the park. Jaffo, what was your sort of reaction to a lineup?
It's just, like we were saying at the start, like just deflated and flat, because, I feel kind of bad for Luke Kundal, because he didn't play bad yesterday, but it's like he shouldn't be coming straight into a starting 11 like that. He shouldn't be third, fourth choice in a midfield too. Just shocking that our squad depth is that weak, that a kid who's never played for Wolves before this season, seniorly, has now had to come in for two major games. From Tottenham and that Newcastle game is as big, really. But yeah, I know you mentioned I think he probably should have played. And hindsight's a beautiful thing, but I feel like if you got the attacking fullbacks, you can kind of nullify what Newcastle tried to do with their wingers.
Yeah,
you can try and force them to try and defend a little bit more than they used to. Whereas Marcel, although he does get forward and put the crosses in, his defensive position's a lot deeper than Aitnori. So I think that's maybe where Bruno should have thought, okay, I can try and pin him back, I can try and put more pressure on. But like I say, hindsight's a beautiful thing with this sort of thing.
Yeah, I think, the Kundal one is difficult because no one else can play there. He was fourth man up, and Neves is out injured. Dendonka's unavailable through illness, so he has to sort of play. And I think that deflation we sort of felt as fans very much carried into the game itself. That first half, good God, it was bad for
so bad. it was the worst. I can't remember a half that bad for ages. I mean, we got to get in the half, like, I don't know, we barely even got out of our half, and it was against Newcastle.
I was going to say that the stat line I saw at half time is I've pulled it up from Dominic Skerr, because it was first person, I think I saw post it, but that was the first time Wolves failed to have a touch in the opposition box in a first half of a Premier League game this season. I mean, there's almost no words for how poor that was. It felt like we had a front three, but they were like playing almost as midfielders, if you know what I mean. Like, there was just like no kind of drive forward throughout that team in the first half.
Yeah, I think a lot of what Fabio Silva did well against Villa, he couldn't do against Newcastle, because the way he had to play was he had to play more as a target man. He had to try and hold the ball up. And he don't really have the strength and nous to do that, play that sort of game at the moment. Whereas, say, against Villa, they're playing it into the channels for him. And when he was running up against Tyrone Mings in that game, that's where he looks more natural and more comfortable. And I think you start looking at the squad depth again and him and his with these stupid decisions.
I think it's hard to knock Fabio. I think he did as good all he could do, really. I think it was just so obvious. It was just the middle. There was just absolutely nothing in the middle. There was nothing. The defence had the ball at their feet and they're literally looking up and couldn't find a pass. And I mean, their passing was terrible, granted, but you could tell their reluctance to hit it long because Bruno screamed it about that before. But at the same time, there was literally nothing on in the middle. I think Kunda would seem to be popping up at left back half the time, and it just left Moutinho in the middle against three big players at the end of the day. I mean, that must be the shortest midfield two we've ever put out, isn't it? Like 5'7" each. It's mad.
And I think, I was going to say, interesting, shortest, but also I reckon that's the widest age range we've also had as centre midfield pairings.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. You're probably right. Mark Davis, Paul Ince.
That would be the only other pairing I can think. But because I was sort of hoping, you know, you needed Moutinho to almost just guide Kundal through that, but it felt like we'd got outmatched in that midfield very early on, that we weren't going to get the possession that we needed. We didn't have it at Dendonka, who, you know, he had a good game against the Villa. And I think we're all sort of hoping, you know what, he can supply a bit more of that again. He's got enough about him that, you know, he's not going to dictate play, but he can at least make himself busy. And I think, no, we'll talk about Kundal specifically in a bit, but you know, not necessarily quite at this level just yet. But it was, you know, let's be honest, it wasn't just him. I mean, that forward line, you know, we talked about the lack of shots. I don't think I've seen a more anonymous front line bit this season. You know,
West Ham, that was the last time, wasn't it? And it was those three. Yeah, yeah. And there's no coincidence that it was the same front three and the same manner of performance in the first half as it was then.
There's just no... It's almost like on FIFA, like, you know, when you've got like the connectivity, just those three just don't have any, which is bonkers because Silva and Trincao seem to have a little bit of something going against Villa. But I think I saw Tim Spears tweet something like all of our bad performances this season have been kind of when Jimenez hasn't been playing and we haven't started. Like when we've churned out like a really bad half of football or something, it's when Jimenez hasn't played. Now, I don't think, you know, the correlation to causation's quite there. But at the same time, I think it's easy to forget that, did we get slightly ahead of ourselves with Silva after that Villa game? You know,
I thought he wasn't too bad. Yeah, no, I mean, like, no. I think he did all he could with what he was given. I genuinely think that. I mean, second half, I thought he actually played quite well.
Second half, he was decent.
He was the only one who seemed to get any shots off in the second half. Yeah. He was the one who was trying to test the goalkeeper. I just think if you're going to look at one person at that front three, the odd one out swung. Because he's the least technical footballer, you know. When we were talking about earlier about his touch is just not there, and it looks like it's a mistake to pull the trigger this early on him.
Yeah, I was going to say we had a question from yeah. Twitter corner regarding that. I'll see if I can dig it out quickly. Yeah, from still with V, I asked, you know, was there any advantage to the premature signing of Hwang? You know, have we saved any money, or is it just to, was it just to appease fans? Because, you know, he had such a bright start for us, but, you know, after coming back from injury, we've had very key highlights. We've had nothing really since he's come back from injury to hang our hats on.
No, I think Arsenal away, I thought he was half decent. He got the goal. Yeah. I thought he actually played okay. That, but it's not. It's fits and starts. It's not enough. I don't know if there's something in it in regard to, you know, Fosun are all, you know, cute, aren't they, with the finances of deals and things like that. I don't know if there's something in it. It has to go on a certain balance sheet at a certain time, maybe. I mean, 14 million, you know, it's not a massive amount. She could probably sell him tomorrow and get probably something similar. But he's not going to bring you into Europe, is he? I don't think, as a starter, at least.
No, I think that's it, to be honest. And you could argue Wolves were potentially savvy just on that alone, in terms of, look, it's not a great amount in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, even if we sell him, it will probably be for 10 million and they'll swallow a bit of a loss or whatever. But I mean, the only kind of key incident in the first half was VAR coming to the rescue for us for once. I nearly texted Matty from the Gallagher shots as soon as it went in. As we've been talking about Chris Wood being the bane of our lives. I say, like, VAR doing its job. Always backed it.
It's nice when it goes in our favour for a change, isn't it? It doesn't happen often.
No.
You've got to take it when you can.
I mean, to be fair, when I kind of saw it live, I couldn't quite work out what happened to our defending at all, because it felt like they had acres of space in the box. So to start with, and, you know, even the offside was quite tight. You know, it wasn't, I can see why it wasn't flagged straight away. It was like half a boot or something. You know, it wasn't one of these, you know, how do I say it politely? It wasn't like an armpit hair. It was obvious enough to give it where you go, okay, fair enough, you see it. Whereas, you know, it wasn't like, was it the Johnny one against Liverpool?
For the Neto goal. And the Pedence, like, one in Fulham, wasn't it? It was exactly the same. It was literally nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, well done on the refs on that one. But it did feel like that was a bit of a get-out-of-jail card for us, because they deserved... No, I wouldn't say they deserved to be leading at that point, but we showed nothing up to that point.
I was going to say, we deserve to be 1-0 down at half-time, you know, just based on performance alone. But you could tell it was a wake-up call, because, I don't like, it cut to Cody, and he was going wild at everyone. He was trying to roll people up. He realised, look, we're having a mare here. We need to sort ourselves out.
Yeah, but I think, you know, both Kilman and Bolly, for like different, you know, Kilman was a bit sloppy around that instance in the first half, and then Bolly got caught under the ball a couple of times, which isn't like him. He seemed to struggle with Chris Wood and got beaten a couple of times with the ball over the top, which was frustrating for these, you know, two really solid defenders most of the time. But it did feel like after half time it did even up a bit. And I don't know about you guys, but did you ever feel confident we'd actually score?
Sure, no.
But yeah.
I think my gripe with the whole game in a general with us is, I don't think Newcastle played that well. I just think we sunk to their level. They played fairly well. You know, they deserve to win, but I don't think they were exceptional. I don't think they were better than Wolves were. You know, would be on their best day. I just think we were dreadful, and I think we were so, like, dropping ourselves down to their level, and even dropping our tempo to what we're, you know, and trying to adapt our game to them. And I think that kind of what gripe me the most about the way we played attackingly.
Yeah,
is that we played at Newcastle's tempo.
Yeah, it didn't feel like they. I'm trying not to give them too much of a discredit here, but it wasn't like they completely outplayed us, and like their defenders were really good and really on it, and they were doubling up on Silva and making it difficult for him or anything like that. They won that midfield battle, which I think kind of dictated some of it. But it wasn't like they were leaps and miles.
No. It wasn't like how it felt against Palace. Like, you know, Palace was that they did a number on us properly. I mean, but we were so abject that we made an average Newcastle side look like, you know, capable of winning comfortably.
I was going to say, actually, for Paris game's a good one to bring up in comparison, because you can tell they're a better side by the fact they scored more goals and Saar had more saves to make. You know, Saar actually had, well, apart from the... But apart from the penalty, which we'll come on to, had a pretty quiet evening. It wasn't tested lots. It wasn't like we're, you know, they were carving us open, having lots of really strong chances throughout the game. Whereas, like, against Palace, Saar probably had one of his best games towards and we lost 2-0. Which I think highlights the point that this was a, you know, not an amazing team who dug out, who got the win against the team. We just didn't show up, which is, you know, always disappointing as a fan. We talked Saar, and it feels like it happens every week, but it doesn't. It's just happened 2 weeks in a row. But gave away the penalty. Now, I've got thoughts on this, but I'm keen to sort of hear what you guys think first. So, do you think it was really stupid by Saar, or it was a nailed-on penalty, or do you think Wood was a bit... not clever. Nah, fuck it, I can just say it. Do you think he just bought the penalty?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think all three. I think Saar's been rash, he's been clever, and it was a penalty. I think it was a penalty. In the modern rules, it's a penalty. Yeah, he's dragged his feet, and we see it a lot. But it probably is a penalty. If that's the other way around, we're screaming for that.
Yeah,
I think it's just painful, the fact that is a penalty in the modern game. I think to watch it, you, as a football fan, in reality, you think, no, not really, it's soft. But like you're saying, nowadays they give them for that, and so
they need to look at it.
I feel harsh to criticise Saar because he's done the right thing in trying to close him down. That's what I like about Saar is the fact that he's not one of these goalkeepers who sits on his line like Patricio would. But in the past, he's come out and he's tried to block the ball, try and challenge for it. It's just, just as you say, he's got a bit more nous, Chris Wood, and he's as they used to say, you know, he's a clever footballer, and he's bought it.
He's probably like, I think what frustrates me is that I agree with you, Jeffo, that I like that Saar comes for it and he'll challenge for it. Problem is, if you do, you need to get it right. And what's that, the third time this season? Because he had one against Spurs, which was like second game. But he had for one against Villa, and I think we kind of not let him off, but I think because it felt like Watkins kind of threw himself into him a bit. But he still came out and didn't get near the ball. And then we had it yesterday as well. And I know it must be really difficult for a goalkeeper to brace yourself to kind of claim through a ball in that manner, but be able to stop yourself. Because Chris Wood's on his weaker foot. He's driving forward. It's not like Chris Wood was going to, you know, pull out a Cruyff turn and come back inside. He wasn't shaping up to shoot. He wasn't going to get to the ball. He did what Watkins did and kicked the ball. Basically, he kicked the ball out of play. You know, for those on YouTube, you can always see where the ball is when Saar makes contact with him. And it's a good, like, 3 metres away from him. It's about to roll out of play. And you can't do think, well, hang on. If he'd have been able just to... I sound such a layman here. But he'd just been able to run and do almost like the old Peter Schmeichel star jump but make no contact with him. Wood's just going to run the ball out of play. Because, you know, however many goals he gets against us, he's not exactly the most agile forward to you know, turn, is he, Chris Wood?
I agree. He's made a bad decision, Saar, but I think with Saar, I think you have to take him as he is.
Yeah.
Because how many times has he done that and he saved us, you know, countless times. I think as a sweeper keeper, it's the sort of thing you've got to almost accept.
Mm.
But for me, I think there's the biggest issue for me, or bigger issue for me, was that there's about three or four things before that even gets to that stage. Yeah. So we were on the attack, one of our rare attacks. I think Marcel cuts the ball back to no one, error one. Then I think, I don't know who it is, plays a loose pack, but is it someone plays a loose pass back to Kundal and he slips, or
yeah,
got the wrong way around?
No, and then Kundal was the one who slipped. Yeah.
And then Cody doesn't engage anywhere near early enough on Wood, in my opinion. He backs off or he needs to show him a bit more outside. He's not really showing him outside, he's showing him almost into the box, really. And I know Cody, you know, he hasn't got pace, but neither has Chris Wood. It's not like it was St. Maximin against him. I think he can engage that a lot earlier.
I think you're right, because Cody was doing exactly what you asked him to do then against Ollie Watkins, against Villa. Mm. There's a couple of times where he was 20 yards ahead of his other defensive pairing, and he challenged Ollie Watkins early, and that's what he didn't do against Wood. And I don't know why, and I don't know why they've changed that.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, he should have challenged him earlier. But when he's doing that in previous games, and like the last game, he's like, why is he not doing it now?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's really strange how it seems like I'm sure it feels like we have this probably same conversation every time we play Chris Wood. We just back off and we don't say press him close. We don't get physical to him. And you're right. Like the transition, I think for their goal, it was like two long passes, and it just cut our team apart. And you know, the slip's unfortunate by Kundal. And the defending is one of those where it didn't feel like it was calamitous, but it just wasn't good. Like it wasn't like really, you know, pull your hair out bad, which we've seen from Wolves in years gone by. But at the same time, you just gotta go, oh well. It's like you say, like literally every phase of positions could have done, should have done better.
Yeah,
and you know, even after the goal, I never had confidence that we'd bring it back. You know, Sons made a great point on the YouTube comments, Vinyl Revival, great name, you know, about the subs. But I think we made those subs in the 80th minute or something silly. And, you know, well after the goal, but the goal was in the 72nd minute. So, you know, to actually try and impact and change the game, And Neto looked, you know, quite lively when he came on. I thought he looked quite bright, as you sort of expect from him.
Did Lars say that he only had 20 minutes in him?
Yeah,
did I don't, read I, that. I think he said.
I don't think Neto's fit enough to start.
No.
I think that's becoming more apparent, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think if you're playing that bad, because we were playing bad, okay, we start the second half a bit better. But a change has got to happen, and that next season it's going to happen a lot because you get five subs. So other managers are going to be a lot more reactive than that, and you know, you can be reactive with one sub. I mean, what he did—he narrowed everything up, didn't he? In the second half, he just made the team. Mm. He brought the team in, so it sort of almost tried to negate the obviously dominance that they had in the midfield, just by bringing everyone inwards. But yeah, it was a tactical tweak, but it needed personnel as well. I was screaming with Finetto to come on. I mean, granted, I didn't know he only had 20 minutes, but just any change, just a change, something different. Yeah, that's annoyingly, it's not, I don't bring him up every podcast, but that's an Adama game. At least just something, just an X factor, just something a bit different where you can just change something.
Yeah, and I think you're saying about bringing it narrow. I think that actually probably hurt us offensively. I think you're right, defensively. I think it tightened everything up and gave us more chance in the midfield. But then you bring the forwards inside and you've got Hwang and Trinkau coming narrow. And that's where we've seen in previous games when we've played bad is because we've had Pedenc and Trinkau, or Hwang and Trinkau, coming in too narrow, and they've not been able to get shots off because all they're going into is crowds of players.
And if you've not got overlapping wing backs like your Sinedos and Ait Nouris, again, because Johnny's an inverted wing back, isn't he, really? He plays on the inside more than the out. And Marcel, we know, isn't anywhere near as, you know, offensive as Ait Nouris. So I think, again, it's just personnel. But it's hard to criticise Bruno. He's, you know, what was he going to do with that 11? He didn't have any other 11 to play, really, did he? Maybe we can argue about Marcel and Ait Nouri, but the rest of the team had to pick itself because of the situation that he was in.
Yeah, so yeah, like we mentioned Neto. So if he's only got 20 minutes in him, we can't have Sot Hwang. Chiquinho, again, someone who definitely doesn't seem like we can trust him with a full game. But it was interesting to see him bring on Cham Campbell. I was trying to work out the last time he played for Wolves. I think it was against the Villa in that League Cup game. Where I think Nuno bottled it, basically. Okay. But again, you know, I was trying to think of before the show, let's see if we can get a couple of positives out of yesterday's game. It was nice to see sort of a couple of academy players on the pitch at the same time, in terms of him and Kundal, to be fair. I mean, it felt like he was on just, again, same as like Neto in a way, and also where we've seen Chiquinho in the past, just something a bit different, just try and bring a spark to a game.
He looked quite neat. I thought he looked all right, to be fair. He definitely didn't any worse than the players who started the game.
No, exactly. I think he at least gave him an account of himself. In terms of some players, let's talk about Luke Kundal, because we've mentioned him a little bit. I don't think his game was all bad. Saying that, I know what I gave him as a rating. But how did you guys see it? Do you think it was that he was told to play a certain way? Because I think first half, a lot of what he was doing was really conservative and really almost reserved. And then second half, he did try a bit to be a bit more adventurous.
I think if you look at the Tottenham game, he comes in for Moutinho. So when you've got him and Moutinho on the pitch, in Lager's eyes and in Lager's mind, what I'm taking from that is he's similar to Moutinho. So you've got two of the same player in the midfield. They want to occupy the same space and they want to do the same job. So it's difficult to try and accommodate two of the same player within the same team.
Yeah, I think you're right. What you said, Richard, he was very, very conservative, wasn't he? I don't think he played a forward pass until we went a goal down. But, you know, obviously then it's going to free him up because in theory there's nothing to lose. He actually drove forward with the ball a little bit, but, you know, he looked ahead of him, but he was incredibly conservative before that. And this is hard to knock the kid, because early games, often, you know, you say to people, don't you, make their debuts, well, look, just get your first few passes in, you know, play your way in, don't do anything too stupid. But then Lars keeps making reference to, well, we're not taking enough risks, we're not doing this and that. And he definitely didn't take any risks in the first half. And to be honest, even then, I don't think his passing was great, if I'm being truthful. If you compare him to the other 39 on the pitch, I think it's a different story.
Yeah,
Guimaraes just absolutely ran the game. He was, and maybe that's the difference. You know, we don't, you know, they've invested in a centre mid of quality, and we haven't. And ultimately, you know, we've got on the back end the result. If Guimaraes is on the other team, that game is the result. We win that game. If Guimaraes is playing for us and not them, we win that game.
Yeah,
I think he controlled the middle. He absolutely dominated the midfield.
You can tell that. You know, if you look at that Wolves lineup, and you say, it's the difference between Anfison, who's worth 50 million, isn't it? And yeah, it was frustrating to see Kundal sort of play like that. Because again, you clip, you see him play for the under 23s. You can see how much more advanced he plays. It's a walk in the park from that level. Don't get me wrong. Like he can play more advanced because he understands what he's doing a bit more, I guess. But you know, whether it was he was told, you sort of say, just don't lose the ball. Just make sure you recycle it. Whatever you do, just, you know, make sure you've got Kilman one side of you and Bettini over the other. Just get the ball to one of those and let them carry it. But because I guess we're so used to playing with, you know, like Neves in that midfield, who can control it a bit more and can dictate that offensive play more, it was incredibly noticeable that we just didn't have that extra impetus going forward. And like, the common denominator was him, but I don't think that's like should be any sort of shame on the guy, because you know he still, like, it's a bare minimum you could argue, but you know, still gave his all. You know, he didn't go into, you know, complete hiding even after that slip and stuff like that. He still was, you know, shown for the ball even if it wasn't kind of going forward. But anyone else kind of stand out for you guys? Because I think what I was thinking when I was doing the player ratings, and someone who thought I had a quietly half effective game was Johnny yet again, but I think that's just Johnny being Johnny, isn't it?
Seven out of ten player, isn't he? Every game. Yeah. I think he's just consistent, Mr. Consistent. He's Falconeri's Kevin Foley, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is there an argument now to put him on the left and Semedo in on the right?
I think so. I think he's more effective than Marcel on the left.
Yeah. I think
Semedo needs to come back in, doesn't he, now?
Yeah. I mean, like, Johnny and Semedo, they bring you different qualities. Like, Semedo is great on the outside. Johnny is, as you said, Tom, he's great at kind of just tucking inside, going forwards and finding that underlapping run. Whereas Semedo's got that extra bit of pace to beat a man and to kind of drive down the on the flank a bit more. So it'd be interesting to sort of see if we could try him on the left, because Johnny links up play and he likes to kind of get forward in his own way, in a different way to Semedo. And I don't quite know why Ait Nouri's not started the last two games, unless it's that Marcel's just outperforming him training. But I think you've got to make an argument now. If Semedo's fit and Johnny's fit, you start them both, because they're almost at the peak of their careers, whereas Marcel and Ait Nouri aren't, but they're of your ends of the career spectrum, aren't they, I guess. I know you sort of said about Fabio Silva at the start, not that we got ahead of ourselves, because he put in such a good game against Villa. I did think he was the only person who I think we looked like potentially might score, because he had that great chance, I thought. I mean, he carved it out himself magnificently. It was just after the commentator slated him about something as well. But again, a decent enough showing.
Well, the second half, he was probably our best player, to be honest. Mm. I think he did pretty well. That turn and run that he made, I thought was really good. I just don't know, as I say, what else he could have done, really. Okay, he had that header, maybe could have done a bit better. Yeah. I think, if he scored 10 goals this season, that maybe goes in, or his prime role, maybe that's a goal. It was a bit weak, and I think maybe that's what he was getting slated for. But then that snapshot was excellent. It showed a bit of predatory instinct there, and he made a really good run. I think Kundal overhit a pass, and he was through well. I think his movement's excellent. I like the kid, I do. I really do. I think he's got a lot about him. And as I say, if he's playing in a progressive, like forward, attacking team or attacking performance, I should say, like we did against Villa, he looks good if you play him in that sort of game, where it's expected, like you said earlier, Jaffo, to sort of bully defenders, hold up the ball a little bit, bring people into play. It's probably not what you can get from it at 19 at least.
Yeah. No, he's not ready to carry a game on his shoulders in the same way that Pete Rowell. We'd be able to rely on him two, 3 years ago. Like, if we had him there starting, we'd have probably drawn that game 1-1. In the same way you said, they had a £50 million centre midfielder, we'd have had a £30 million striker. Yeah. Who, Jimenez was great at just seeing us through one of those games. He might have scored that header, or he might have, because that turn and shot's like trademark Jimenez, isn't it? Back in the day.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought he was the only one who kind of gave a decent attacking account of themselves. Just craving he gets that goal now. In terms of what Bruno was saying, to be honest, I think it's pretty much on the money, isn't it? Frustrating evening, particularly the first half. You're telling me I watched it. Weren't getting forward. We needed to be more aggressive. Second half, we did better in being more dynamic, but we missed a big chance to win today, which I thought was an interesting phrase, because I'll be honest, I don't think we ever did enough to win that game. We barely did enough to have drawn. If we'd have drawn that 1-1, the form book suggests against Newcastle, I'd have felt a bit like we'd have robbed them of a couple of points there if we'd have actually got a last-minute draw.
Yeah, I agree. I think what he means, big opportunity missed, it was like an opportunity to close the gap, or opportunity where we could have collected three, I wouldn't say 3 points, a comfortable 3 points, but you got a better chance of beating Newcastle than you have City or Liverpool, someone like that. I think he meant it in that sort of reference, really.
Certainly puts the pressure on the teams who played today as well.
Well, I was going to say, we'll take a short break in a minute, guys, and we'll talk about that, because a couple of results have gone our way. And my segment that I'd had planned last night has now all of a sudden changed because of it. I shouldn't get upset by that, should I, to be honest? Oh, man, you lost. But yeah, overall, who are we gonna, who are we giving man of the match to?
I'll get Johnny for me.
Fabio, maybe. I wouldn't put anyone above a six, to be honest. But maybe Fabio, for work rate and endurance.
Yeah, I think on my fours of football ratings, just for reference, I think I gave both of those a 6.5. So I probably need to split the vote, don't I? Now I'll give it to Fabio just because he was the only one who looked like we might potentially score. Although Johnny, I think, was the only person like the first half and for a significant portion of the second half who'd had some shots. Like, there was a couple of like proper long ranges where it was like, just because you scored two games in a row doesn't mean you're still not a wing back. You know, sometimes you need to stay in your lane in life.
I had to look this up because at the time I mentioned it to my, I was watching it with my dad. We had on the pitch, you know, bear in mind we're 1-0 down to Newcastle, desperate for a goal. We had eight league goals between us on that 11 that finished. Fantastic. And six of those were from defenders. So, I mean, we were never going to score.
Yeah.
Cody 3, Johnny 2, Kilman 1, Moutinho 2, and there was no other goals in that team. And what are we game 32?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that says it all, doesn't it?
I mean, they're spreading the goals out, and then it's, you say, we didn't even look threatening from set pieces. So, it was a recipe for disaster. Right, we're going to talk about some of the games that have happened today and where we are in the league after a short break. Catch you in a second, guys.
Hi all, Gully from Wolves Fancast here, and just like all of you long-suffering Wolves fans, I know exactly what it feels like to be lacking a creative spark here, some outside-of-the-box thinking there, but our sponsors Pixel Yeti Media are here to help. They're a creative agency that cover all of your web design, branding and marketing needs, with our very own WolvesFancast.com, a fine example of their work. So much so that I hear Jeff Shee is looking to do a deal this summer. For now, it's back to the team to ask just where the Diogo Jota money is gone. We may have just had our answer.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. Make sure if you're watching this on YouTube to like, share and subscribe as always. My question to you guys that I drafted up after the game rather annoyed and drunk was, is the European dream dead? And then sort of since then, a couple of results have kind of gone our way, mainly the Man United game. I think the Arsenal one, yeah, I'd be amazed if we could kind of overtake Arsenal. And Spurs obviously weren't so to take the most colossal Spurs up that ever spurred. But do you think we still got any hope of getting to Europe after yesterday's game?
I think, like I said in the preview, I think our best chance of getting into Europe is finishing seventh, and then somebody who's already in Europe winning the FA Cup. Like, that's our best chance.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, we've played a game more than Man United and West Ham, who are both on 51. We're on 49. Again, the goal difference as well is not great compared to those two as well. So you could argue that's potentially another point as well, particularly against West Ham as well. And then you've got Arsenal, who've got two games in hand, who are 5 points above us as well. So big kind of gap. The positive side, I guess, is the gap between us and even Palace, who are, you know, placed behind us. Two games in hand on us, yes, but there's a 12-point gap at this point. So, you know, it almost feels like we are incredibly comfortable at eighth place at the moment. But in terms of today, did we see it as a missed opportunity because of Man United in particular losing? Or, you know, do we see it as, you know what, it's almost a bit of a sigh of relief because we're still, you know, we could still kind of potentially catch up with Man U?
Probably both, but you missed opportunity probably more so for me. But it's been our way this season, hasn't it? Every time we've had a sniff of getting close to something, we just seem to just throw a game, basically. Just, you know, just don't turn up. And it's hope that kills you. So I'm sitting on the fence of, I still, that's obviously a tiny bit of hope, but we're not finishing, like Jeffo says, we won't finish higher than seventh. It'll be seventh or eighth. Yeah. But even then, you know, you said about comfortable in eighth. I'm just a little bit concerned about Leicester because I think they've got the same points as Palace, I think, but they've got four games in hand on us, I believe. I mean, they've got the European stuff, which might get in their way. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so they're 12 points.
But they've got, they can potentially kind of claim 12 points from their four games in hand. Whether that, you know, whether Leicester can actually hit a home run in those sort of additional four games is something else. But, you know, they've got potential to climb. I guess the only nice thing, and I say nice thing, is at least the Villa aren't going to catch us, right? That with 13 points in a game in hand, you know, that feels a bit more, you know, after last week and their drumming today, at least that makes me feel a bit better.
Yeah, they need to learn to stay in their lane.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, if you want to feel better, just look at any other Midlands club. It's great.
Yeah.
If, you know, if ever you're down, just have a look at their Twitter. So it's great. It's great.
You know, it's, yeah. Definitely, but I think we're right. I think if we can get seventh, I think it'll be a minor miracle. As one of the YouTube commenters say, yes, it's slim, but out of our last six games, three of them are against City, Chelsea, and Liverpool. So you're almost hoping for, I guess, a maximum of 9 points from the other three games. And you know what, if we can finish the season on what, if I can do my quick maths, 58 points, will that be enough to finish seventh? I don't quite know.
Can you see West Ham getting 7 points out of 8 games?
Yeah, exactly. That's basically relegation form for them to. I don't know who their opponents are, to be fair, but you know,
I think 61 got a seventh, I think, in one of the 2 years. I think it's our record points. I think we need 12 points to get our record amount of Premier League points. So, I mean, if we get close to that, I mean, it's been a wonder season, hasn't it, really? You know, whether it gets us seventh or not. I think if you get anywhere close to 60 points, you know, if you'd have said that at the start of the season, I'd have snapped your hand off. So I'm trying to be a bit more philosophical about it.
You know, I think the fact that I reckon we can get to at least 55 points, I think it's a solid Premier League campaign. I don't think, you said at the start of the season, you'll get 55. You know, just with sort of basic math, you know, looking at the history books, as it were, you'd be pretty confident. You'd, you know, you'd secure top half finish and probably more with that amount. There is just almost a bit of a sense of what could have been, especially in the last sort of 2 months, because we've dropped some really fucking silly points.
Yeah, I agree.
But I'm sure every, I've said before, you know, pretty sure every fan says that, don't they? But it feels classic Wolves, doesn't it? But we've had this opportunity, we've had the chances to kind of claw it back. And, you know, I think particularly like the no-show against West Ham, I know we're lagged and the back-to-backs essentially to Arsenal as well, but yeah, fingers crossed we can somehow finish seventh. And you know, so as you sort of said, Man U have a hilarious collapse, or West Ham kind of buckle under the weight of Europe as well. But right, we're going to do some questions, some Twitter corner, because some of them are actually quite fun and it might cheer us up. So Koza asks, the A1 motorway was the most boring part of the journey till I watched the game. One in the morning driving back down the same road with only Monster and nicotine for stimulation. What do you use to stay awake on those long away drives?
Heavy metal.
Yeah?
Just really heavy music.
I'm a big fan of Mint Imperials for a long drive. I'm not away days, yeah, okay, fair, but like just in general, because I end up having to go down to South Wales quite a bit. Because the in-laws live there, so usually something like, I would say our fantastic show as well, But I don't. I feel like it'd be egotistical of us listening to shows that I've been on. if I mentioned that publicly, I should probably do a shout out because Stu was supposed to be on today, but isn't. You could also, if you wanted something to entertain yourselves on long drives, you could also listen to a cage fighting podcast. So there's your plug for this week, guys, as well.
How much has he paid you for that?
Nothing, but hopefully I'll ask him for a beer. Yes. And hopefully he won't pour it over me like he did with Gully last time he went out. Right, next up is actually from Stu. That was well timed. Okay, when we lost to Burnley last season, I watched Gremlins to cheer me up. After last night's shambles, it was Sonic the Hedgehog. What do you recommend the next time Wolves try to ruin your life? I'm assuming like film to watch, not just like in general, but you can take the question however you want, guys.
Masters is on there, so I've got a real hankering for watching Happy Gilmore. So I'll be up for a bit of Happy Gilmore. Cheer me up. I haven't seen that film for a bit, but I might put it on this weekend.
Yeah. There's not many golf films, are there?
No. Tin Cup, Happy Gilmore. I think too many.
Groundhog Day? Is that got golf in it? I don't know. I'm not really a film buff.
Groundhog Day is the one. Bill Murray, isn't it? Same thing over and over again. Yeah.
Caddyshack.
Good shout.
Yeah. I feel like we should have had just a question about golf at this point. But Masters is a good shout to cheer you up to watch. I'm watching Homeland at the moment. I don't know whether I'll call it a light watch. Trying to think of something to watch, like maybe something like Mike Bassett, England manager, because I feel like that would like appropriately kind of get me back to like loving football again as well. So like it has a combination of being like a fun film, but also it's about football as well. So maybe that.
Yeah. Those Cody Neto videos are quite good to watch. They've done a load of them now. That always cheers me up a bit.
Yeah.
They're
players
good
like
value, though, as well.
Yeah, did you watch the Water Cup Championship?
Yeah, that was good. Yeah,
now,
yeah.
So, something I wanted to highlight in this was Hwang Ki-chan's nickname is just Channy. And I just feel like they could be a little bit more original. I don't know as to what, but I always find it interesting with like players' nicknames, because actually it does like turn out it would be like the same as me. Like my nickname, if I went into that dressing room, would just be Hobbsy. Okay, you know, just
that's Mike Bassett, isn't it? It's classic. Yeah. Just little nicknames. That's all it is.
Do you reckon Gian Martino is just Zhao? Then
isn't he Moots? He's Moots,
he
I
Moots?
Think. Moots, yeah. I don't know if you've played Sunday League, but it's exactly the same. It's just some sort of derivation on the name.
Like I don't know what else I'd really want them to be. I just flicked onto the YouTube comments. Thank you for everyone who's commenting. In terms of what to watch, Will Martin went for Schindler's List.
To cheer him up. Excellent.
Yeah. Wow. Fair enough. I mean, it wasn't that bad last night. It wasn't quite there. And Neil Lewis suggests Breaking Bad, which,
kind of bad show.
That's a good show.
Oh, yeah, that could get me on. And also shout out for the pun. Oh no, he's just said Caddyshack. I misread that and thought he said Cody Shack, which would have been a better comment. No offense, but here we are. Right, we've still got a few more questions. Right, this is an interesting one, as it's really small. But it's argued that dodgy citizens tend to even themselves out over a season. Considering Raul's red versus Leeds, the Man City penalty, Neves' foul versus United when they played on and scored, and a fairly soft penalty last night. Bradders can't think of any similar ones evening out our way. Can you guys think of any soft decisions that have kind of gone Wolves' favour this season?
I mean, if you look at our last night in isolation, I think the VAR one, okay, it was offside. Offside's offside, it's black and white, but, you know, that's one that we've been on the wrong side, the wrong side
we'd
on
have
plenty
been
of times.
We'd have been fuming on him.
Yeah, exactly.
We'd have given our sort of 2 cents on that one, so definitely last night in that.
Yeah, it's a good point, though. I can't think of too many where we've we've done well out of, to be honest. In regard to even it out, I don't believe that. The top teams get the better decisions. It's just, I think it's just been proven now. VAR gives them a chance to make a, you know, to rectify, you know, 50-50 in the favour as well. We've had this debate before.
Yeah. It also helps, think about is the Jota penalty last week.
Yeah.
And that goes on every game. And it's now Liverpool suddenly get a penalty out of it.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
But I agree that big teams tend to get more decisions, but as we sort of highlighted with Wolves last night, you tend to get more decisions when you get into the box.
Which, you gotta take risks.
I was going to say, we haven't got that many penalties. Well, yeah, because we did get into the fucking box to win them. Or you get offside. Yes. Yes. I'm trying to think. The only one I can think of, and I personally think that it was right, but I had lots of Arsenal fans kicking off about the Martinelli sending off because he didn't get a chance to realise he was on a booking. Now, personally, I think the rules kind of back it up and everything as well. And I'm sorry, I still think the ref made the right decision. But that was one where I had lots of fans moaning about it as well. But
that's just Arsenal fans. That's just Arsenal fans.
I'm trying to find a way if this switch won't bite me on the arse. They are the most interactive opposition fans I've experienced on Twitter this season.
I'll say they're a bunch of arseholes. I don't care.
The Jaffo show.
Yeah, like my Twitter up, they're a bunch of arseholes. I don't care. Interactions.
Cheers, guys. Honestly, for like about 3 weeks after those Arsenal games, I was probably still get tweets from Arsenal fans. At the moment, they are something else. Right, how far did I get? Hungry Like the Wolf, who I think has actually just popped online. So, hello, Hungry Like the Wolf. Right, so there is a bit of text here beforehand. So I'll do the preamble as well. So, the transfer shit talking has started, and we could well have Cody, Neto and Neves poached off us, along with Moutinho, Saiss, Marcel, and maybe even Dendonka off too. So that's a lot of players apparently potentially going. I think reading to kind of that what you will, but you sort of ask, how many senior players going will it take to ruin the dressing room, which is currently one of the best in the Premier League? So I actually think this is a really good question. I don't necessarily the first half, because I think a lot of the rumours at the moment are just, well, they're literally what they are. They're rumours. But it makes a really interesting point. I think we talked about this with the players who are out of contract, that Rudy, Marcel, Saiss and Moutinho, they're all big characters. And, you know, particularly Saiss, Rudy and Moutinho are all very much big leaders in this locker room. So I think he makes a really interesting point about, you know, how many, I guess, this squad can we afford to lose this season instead of like more of having a continual transition?
I think afford to lose is probably a slightly different answer to can lose. I think if we lose Moutinho, I think that one could be the most damaging, because he is the senior statesman. He is the, you know, he's important to that dressing room, because he's got this never lose attitude, never say die attitude. You know, every time, even when it comes there to training, he wants to win. I think losing that from the dressing room and losing that drive that he's got to give to the people around him would be huge. But I think if we lost Neves, which looks like it might happen, and I think maybe Saiss, I think we could come out of it, not as well, but I think we could come out of it fine. I don't think it'd destroy the dressing room.
Neto's a big character, isn't he? And Saar looks like a big character as well. So Neto's just signed a new contract. He's not going anywhere, and no one's going to pay the money we'd want, you know, with him not being fully fit. Cody won't go unless we want him to go. He'll stay there forever, I think.
Yeah.
I think those types of players are sort of key. I think, Neves might. Yeah, if you lose Neves and Moutinho, I think that is quite a big hole to fill. And Saiss, obviously, quite popular. But whether that'll be in the thinking, whether to give John Ruddy a new deal or not, I don't know. Because, you know, as we know, he's good around the dressing room. But it is a big part of it. He makes a good point. I think, you know, we've all seen what bad dressing rooms are like, you know, in the Premier League when you haven't got one. So,
well, Well, he said on YouTube comments, the point was that Man United's shit form's being credited to their dressing room being poor and competitive compared to the winning years, that, you know, it seems a lot more cohesive. And let's say, like, everyone seems to be pointing in the same direction. I think it'll be a real... I don't see us losing Neves and Martinho this summer. I think that'll be a killer blow. I think we can cope with one going, just about, with some heavy investment to replace. I think to lose both is a big void in this team.
I agree.
You know, I think Sace, I reckon we can cope without, because we've got Kilman, we've got Bolly, and... But those two, I think, are just vital to...
The only thing with losing Neves, I think it could change the way we play, and I think that could facilitate Bruno to play a system that he's more comfortable with. So if Neves was replaced with Pelinha, then we could probably look at getting a 10. And the guy who has actually been on my mind for the past few weeks is Eriksen. And I know he's getting on, but I'd love to see him play for Wolves. The whole story around him coming back and starting to play football and score goals again is just fantastic.
We already need an extra midfielder. So if you're losing Neves and Moutinho, that money you're getting from Neves, if you want to replace him with any form of quality, is pretty much going on three midfielders.
Yeah.
And then you're almost back to where you started.
I think you've jumped ahead on a question, to be fair. Which is from Rob Cartwright, which is very well timed, Tom, which is, where do you invest 100 million from Neves? And bluntly, it's on multiple midfielders, isn't it? If you did go for 100 million, we need at least two more anyway.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get 100 million, to be honest. No. I think if we were to get something, it'll be sort of 60 maybe, if we're lucky. But this is it. If you want a quality midfielder now, you've got to pay for... I mean, look at Guimaraes yesterday. I mean, yes, he was, you know, maybe you could afford to go a bit cheaper than that, but, you know, 60 million to get you two quality, really good midfielders.
Another one I'd probably look at is Tchouaméni at Monaco. I think if we could get him 20 million, I think he'd be a good signing.
Yeah, he's decent. Yeah, I think there's a few teams sniffing around him, aren't they? I think, by the looks of it. Yeah.
I think it's... I'm almost anxious for that first big player we have to replace with money. I know Jota went for a healthy sum, but it wasn't light years above what we were currently spending. You know, what do you go for? 45 in total?
Yeah.
I mean, we signed Silva for 35 in total when you include add-ons and things like that. So it's not worlds of difference. But if we sell Neves for, you know, between 60 and 80, so call it 70, like, Wolves will never spend that much on a footballer, because it will kind of disrupt everything. So we'll probably do a Villa, which is, you know, we replace one player with two and things like that, which it does bear the risk of, say, doing a Villa and, you know, you're replacing a star player with three players who were not as good.
It never works. Spurs and Bale. I mean, they pissed that money at the wall completely, didn't they?
They got Soldado with it, and you know what? One of Soldado was straight on the scrap heap. Lamella was inconsistent for 5 years. Eriksen was the only one they got a tune out of for a bit.
Yeah, Leicester are quite good at doing it. Mm. Leicester often, you know, they've had quite a few big sales and they managed to reinvest it pretty well. Actually, they're maybe one of the exceptions.
They're quietly good, to be fair. And I'd be interested to see if Wolves are technically doing it as well, but you know, they buy them almost 6 months before they sell them, which is what they did with the centre-half, whose name I completely banked on.
Fofana.
They did it with Fofana, I think, yeah. And they also did it with
Soyuncu, maybe.
Soyuncu. Yeah. They bought him in January before they sold Maguire, and he barely played. Mm. And then, you know, been in the club for 6 months, which I think kind of helped that transition through. So it'd be interesting to sort of see how Wolves do manage it when the time does eventually come. Hopefully it's not for the foreseeable future, but let's end it on a lovely positive one. arguably Wolves' worst performance of the season versus Newcastle. Do you agree? Been a few contenders this season, so end on a bum note, but what was Wolves' worst performance this season, and was it last night.
No, Crystal Palace. I think for me,
the away game. I'm sure the second.
Take your pick.
The home game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that hurt me a lot. That game.
Yeah, pretty hard to argue with the Palace one either game. Yeah, I'm sure. I think Brentford wasn't great either, but at least Palace were like a. You could see why we lost to Palace, whereas last night they didn't have much about them really. I mean, St Maximin was terrible. That Guimaraes and Shelby played quite well, but that was it. Like Palace, they had a lot of, you know, they had Zaha. Yeah, Elise, they had quite Gallagher. They had quality players all over who really played a good game. Whereas last night, I think it was a case of us just playing so bad that it made it. Yeah, Newcastle didn't have to get a second gear to win, which is depressing, really.
Yeah.
I was sort of thinking of mine. The second game against Crystal Palace, just because we made exactly the same mistakes we did in the first game, and it was just like. The first game against Brentford was crap, but we learnt the second time, showed that now that we needed to. And then against Palace, we're like, yeah, we'll go 3-4-3. We'll get outnumbered in midfield and just got run over. The other one I was thinking of was West Ham away, just because we really needed a result. And we really, at night, I mean, we barely showed up yesterday, but we at least had some chances second half. West Ham, we were just, I know they were shagged from the Thursday night game against Arsenal, but yeah, that was crap.
There's a lot of similarities from last night in the West Ham game for me. It was very similar.
Yeah, it weren't great. But we'll leave it on that slightly down note. Sorry guys, but we'll be back. I don't quite know when, because we now don't have a game over Easter, so I'm hoping we'll bring together a couple of specials in the next couple of weeks. If not, we'll be back to preview the Burnley game middle of the week after next as well. So hopefully we'll give you something to pass away the lonely evenings. But until then, make sure you keep up to date with all things Wolves Fancast at Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Make sure you check out some of our YouTube content as well. It's not just our podcast going on there. We've also got goodies tactical analysis as well for your more in-depth breakdowns of the games. And also shout outs to our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. And of course, we are brought to you by the 90 Min Football Network. So until next time, it's goodbye from Jeffo.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Tom.
Bye, Wolves fans.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.